We really have a treat today in a very special extra episode of the No Film School podcast. Both my guests today on the podcast are Oscar winners, and both have done incredible work on a number of movies. And they both also worked on No Time to Die, the latest entry in the James Bond franchise, one we've been waiting for a long time. It's been delayed. It is in theaters today across the United States. It is on film, it is in IMAX, it is a massive movie, and you should go see it in the theater. But all that aside, today we are talking to Linus, the cinematographer, and Chris, the special effects supervisor, and we're so lucky to have both of them. Linus shot La La Land, First Man, American Hustle, to name a few. And Chris has been doing special effects on Bond movies since, like, you know, Bond movies for a very long time. Just going way back, he's witnessed multiple Bonds. And he's done special effects on like every big special effects thing, not just the Bond movies. I mean, we're talking about stuff like the Star Wars movies recently, some X-Men movies, Inception, The Dark Knight. I mean, this guy is prolific. You know, everything from like Willow, Adventures of Baron Munchausen, License to Kill, et cetera, et cetera. So we are really lucky to have craftspeople of this caliber on this podcast. The things we talk about, there just wasn't enough time to get into everything. But look, if you want to know more about how the biggest, most impressive films are made and how the people at the absolute top of their game in the crafts area work and approach things, this is the episode for you. So if you haven't seen Bond yet, that's okay. We're not going to spoil anything. So you can go ahead and listen to it. And if you have seen Bond, this is a great companion piece to listen to the guys who really put a lot of the work on the final thing, the image that you're going to see that you probably enjoyed because it's enjoyable. So here we go. Thanks so much for doing this. There's so much I want to talk about and ask you about. It's a beautiful film.
Thank you.
In terms of how it's shot. So nice to sit down in a theater and see celluloid.
Yeah.
So tell me about shooting on film at IMAX 65. It was 65, yeah. 70, and 35?
Yes, it was 65 millimeter, but we shot, you know, like the IMAX sequences we shot in IMAX. There's parts of them that required very intimate dialogue where we used the 65 millimeter, still the same film stock, but in 5 perf, right? For audio, we used the Panavision's 65 cameras, but also the Arri 765, which is a 65 millimeter camera. It's just called 765, but it's still 65 millimeter film in the 65, in those sequences that are IMAX. And then It's anamorphic 35 in the other sequences.
And did you, along with Terry and with producers, how did you guys outline, okay, this is going to be IMAX. Like, how do you approach a project and make those decisions? How do those decisions come to pass? Well, what's going to be 35? What's going to be IMAX?
I think it was very clear for Carrie and in our initial discussions, as you may know, I'm also an avid film lover. I love shooting on film because I feel like I can express the visuals the way I want to. I feel like also the film celluloid itself, it adds a little bit more to the images in a way that I cannot predict. So when I see it come back, it has actually sort of romanticized it a little, or like, because I think film is not like, a film should be an impression of, even if it's a realistic film or social realistic drama like we did First Man, I think it helps to shoot First Man domestic scenes on 16 millimeter in order to get the audience to feel like it's happening for real. It's like it helps the documentary feel of it. If it's too like crisp and clear and sort of untouched by, I don't know, it's something with it where it's just like the film really helps me to love the images.
In any movie. I couldn't agree more.
Especially if it's a completely naturalistically shot movie. It's so poetic, so beautiful. It adds to the poetry to things. I'm not talking about my own work. I'm talking about like anytime I see a film and shot on film, it's just, it helps me love and appreciate, you know, the intention of the story. Okay, so in Bond, Carey, he really wanted to shoot this on film. He's been shooting things on film when he can, and I'm a film lover. And we were talking with Barbara and Michael and about this, and they really wanted to support the, you know, Carey has the vision, and they really want to support. And also, all Bond films but one has been shot on film, so it's not like, you know, it wasn't a problem for them or anything. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, it's not more expensive. It's in, you know, thinking about it this way, that my intention with the cinematography is that when the dailies come back, that is how the movie looks like. Like, it shouldn't change. It shouldn't change in the DI. It shouldn't change. It should be perfected in the DI, but it shouldn't like change in the DI. So when you capture on film, and you have done the right things with the lighting, and you have done the right, many films can look beautiful, you know, thanks to the lighting, of course, and the production design and the costume design. And either way, I think I'm not happy if I get the dailies back and I don't like them. You know, I can't like wait till half a year later and find the look there. So part of that was also why I decided to get my dailies colorist, Matt Wallach, who did I think 5 films before this with me in the dailies, and we had this collaboration where every day I got back, you know, stills from him for approval of the color, and in the dailies, you know, playing it pretty natural and with no power windows or anything, of course, we sort of nailed down the look on a day by day basis, right? So I felt like it's an opportunity to actually have the same person doing the color. And I always feel like if I'm happy with it already there in the dailies, that's how the film should look like even with its flaws, you know?
Yeah.
So on this film, we had, Matt was doing the color, like both the dailies and the DI. And we had a pretty quick DI, you know, and you save money by that too. And you save money having, like, being happy with the look already on a day-by-day basis, so.
Streamlining the post-production video editing process just got a whole lot easier with Spider Checker Video. It's a handy, portable tool designed to leverage how video is processed when working with vector scopes, waveform monitors, and editing software. Included is a patent-pending color pattern card that generates an easy-to-understand pattern of hues at 2 saturation levels, so you can see how all colors between primary and secondary colors are being captured. The result? You start off with more accurate color at the start of your video shoots, so you have less color editing to do later. Now you can save $20 off the purchase price of Datacolor Spider Checker Video. Just visit datacolor.com/NFS and enter code NFS at checkout. Offer is valid in US and Canada through 6/30/24.
So it was that a daily conversation about what you were getting back and saying, this is what it's going to be. And you kind of say, we want to push or pull a little bit here or there. Or did you and Carey's plan for the look evolve as you were getting dailies and seeing how things looked?
Yeah, I mean, like we had done tests, obviously, and found sort of a method of how we wanted to approach this film. But I think, you know, like you need to find your language for each film, and it has obviously to do with the story and with the director's vision initially, and what we together as collaborating team around him with a production designer, costume designer, and so on, comes up with our idea, our collective ideas about how this film should feel like. And part of that is testing, obviously, and then hopefully we're right. But sometimes you make adjustments to, I think, perfect it, right? So that's why it's important that you on a daily basis know how the film looks like currently. And if something should change, next time we go lighter on the color there or so and so on. So, and in this film, Carey wanted the journey for the audience in the film, watching it should be dramatic because it's a Bond movie. He felt like it needs to be, you know, larger than life. It's a story that goes from one end to another, and from sort of raw emotions to intimate, dramatic, romantic, or sort of emotional emotions, what you say. And it was important to get sort of the real waves of that. And so therefore, with the location scouting and the collaboration around how to design those sets and how we light those sets, or if it takes place in daytime or nighttime or dusk. That was important all the time in the visuals. And I think that's always important to think about in any movie. And in this case, we obviously based it on the story, and Carrie very much designed the story with that in mind as well. So it would be like it cuts from like an icy Norway that's super isolated and
white.
You know, you don't want to be there and white and monochromatic, actually,
yeah,
to something really romantic and sunny.
Italy,
yeah. And in like the most romantic little stony town.
Yeah.
And guess what? That changes into the most brutal town you can be in if you have an action sequence, because you don't want to hit your head in the walls there or fall over the bridges or ravines. So it's like all of that has to be thought of. And luckily with a film like this, we could plan the visuals that way, that we strive to shoot those scenes in sunset for the romantic part of the Italy, scene.
The fire, the little pieces of paper, the way you used points of light. I mean, there's the broadness of the canvas of this movie. I can't like visually, like to go from these gorgeous shots in this town, daylight, to then the night with the little points of light, to then like the raid on the facility when you have that crazy shot that turns. It gave me vertigo. Like the shot that turns. Tell me about that shot. Like that. And there's a couple of big wonders, and I know Carrie is big on doing that. There's towards the end in the action sequence, that crazy long wonder where he's fighting a bunch of different guys up the stairs.
Yeah, exactly. No, but again, it's like it is the way he wrote a story, obviously with collaborated writing. But he very much was driving on like how the story should move on from here. So you go through that, you come in, and then how do you open the film? And then you get into that lab, right? The complex in London. And what would be beautiful there? Well, they're working at night. We're in twilight. It's twilight outside. It's like dusky twilight, because we thought I was colorful and beautiful towards those green fluorescents. And it had to do with finding what's most suspenseful for this scene. That was the emotion, suspense, right? Here it's suspense. And it's also, I think, the idea of a lab that can exist, but it is a little bit heightened reality because
the
colors that lab has and the characters in there are very special. But, you know, those hazmat suits, they look like that. They just look really funny. And then, like in that lab, for example, Carrie... you know, when we design those shots, it sometimes happens in pre-production when it comes into more details of shots, like in that lab, for example, where we have like a shot coming in and panning right, and then you see someone put a detonator on a thing. And those things are sometimes designed more closer to the shoot, you know, but with the same intention of suspense. And it's both Carrie and I love that. Like, it's nice to describe or like to tell the story with uninterrupted takes, unless they, you know, delay the film in a boring way. So in this case, it was just suspenseful to live in it, you know, and to even, it's not a super long shot, I think, those kind of shots, but they're interesting because you don't need to cut there. It's like, it's actually nice to just pan over. In the other sequence you talk about with
the stairs,
That had to do with, you know, we really wanted the audience to feel like both that Bond is in deep trouble, right? Like, and it really, that's like, he's already been traveling through so much action. And in this scene, you just let him be in even harder action, and it's even going upstairs. And And being there with him, if that was shot on like Steadicam or like a crane or cuts, I don't think it would be as intense. You know, it was much more intense to describe. Sometimes, you know, you just think about what do you want to describe here. It's like, it's hard, it's scary. You should feel what he feels now. And being there in the rain of the bullet, like in the fire of all these bullets and trying to get up with him through that, just felt so much more brutal, inspired obviously by any, I mean, there's so many films you can think of where you can be, you know, dramatic with the storytelling, but I love that, like, flexibility of storytelling that you just think about what the scene is about.
It sounds like you draw a lot from thinking, what are the emotions that I'm, the core emotions always of this scene? I want to ask you about actors, because this film also, you have a lot of great talent, but I feel like for a movie that's so big, you get their faces. So the landscape of an actor's face is maybe the most important thing, right? And the talent in this movie, but like from Daniel Craig to everybody, you're really like in them, in on their faces. How do you shoot and approach a different actor's different, like, do you use different lenses? Do you think about it at different focal lengths, or who looks good, who communicates best with your camera, depending on where you put it, you know? Can you tell me a little bit about how you approach that? Because so much of this movie is action, but honestly, the story is happening on their faces in those close-ups.
Totally. I mean, again, it's like, it's the dramatic part of the story and the emotions that you're after. I think always it that helps you think about, I think, how to shoot things, because you care for the emotions. The other thing is, as you say, with the characters' faces, it happens there. Therefore, you want to be with them in a lot of those, even action sequences. You're actually with the character in their faces. And there are scenes like, for example, in Matera, where he has actually a conflict with Madeleine. They're in the car, right? And
yes.
The scene they're playing is actually something that normally would take place in maybe their hotel room, and they're just sitting there talking about this, like, what is going on here, right? Like, you need that scene to be an intimate, very dramatic, normal, like, social realistic drama scene about trust.
Right. And just scenes from a Marriage Style.
Yeah, exactly. They just happen to be in a DB5 racing for their lives around Matera with really hard walls. And the fun thing with it then, so you that combination is I think genius from the writers, like how that came up. But it's also funny, you know, it's like, because Daniel's character plays that so, it's like funny how he uses his knowledge and power of the violence around, that he can control the violence around him. Like, he's very secure in that, right? He lets things happen to scare her, or like, it's a funny scene, I think, in a way, at the same time as it's a very dramatic scene between them. At the same time, it's like an action sequence. So it's that kind of combination. But so I secretly kind of think always about, which I just always think about, so that I think about, is there a lens that doesn't work for, because lenses can change. I know, you know, like, lenses can change faces in different ways, in really good ways. Like, usually long lenses makes like rectangular faces more powerful looking. You shoot them from underneath to look more heroic or powerful. Some people look really distorted in wide angle lenses, and while others look gorgeous in wide angle. So there is a nature of that where you can manipulate the character's appearance, obviously, with what lenses you choose. So it's important to think about. And it's great in camera testing to test that and see.
You get to test with the stars, because I have to say, even though a lot of movie stars always look great, they look great. These ones have looked great in a lot of movies, but I really felt like you guys nailed something with each of them that I hadn't seen quite. Like, some of the looks, and I don't know if your tests with them help, but everybody from Ana de Armas to Jeffrey Wright in the water, like, you really, like, can you tell me about your tests for each of them and that?
I mean, we didn't test that particular thing with each of them, but we did a lot of camera tests with a bunch of actors. And obviously when we did tests, like, we shot them on also on still cameras for costume tests and so on, and makeup tests, and the design from Carrie's point of view, and the costume and makeup designers for how, and with the actors, obviously, how the characters should appear or feel like. That is always a process where all those looks comes from so many angles, right? And especially, I think, from hair, makeup, and costume, and actor itself. And then when it comes to shooting them, it's just like, there are certain characters that are the classic thing. I think it's just like you shoot more low angle when you want someone to feel like more heroic or scary. And Ana de Armas, for example, she looks, you know, she looks beautiful in any lens. She just looks beautiful anyway. So you don't need to, like, that's just a relief. You know, like when people have no problem. Actually, I think most of them. It's not like the priority of, I think the priority for me is that, and for, I think when you shoot a film, it's like, it's so much more about like, how should it feel, like the emotions of the story. And then you have to live with what is good for the storytelling in terms of the angles too, because sometimes a wide angle describes the scene better than a long lens, and then there happens to be different actors in there, so they have to be in the frame.
But
you definitely care about it, like you consider and think and be careful to not do something bad. But
Well, we have to wrap up. I have a million things I could ask you about because the movie was great. And I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks so much and congratulations.
Thanks, George. Good to see you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Chris and Linus, both for being on the podcast. Check out Bond. It's in theaters. No Time to Die. See it in IMAX. See it big and loud and bombastic as it was meant to be seen, and appreciate the fine work on the large cinematic canvas that we have been waiting for years. It's nice to see it and really enjoy it. And as always, be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, check out our YouTube channel where we have a cool review up by Charles Hain of the iPhone 13 in its cinematic mode. Head over to nofilmschool.com and read all about filmmaking news, education, and tech. Thanks so much for listening.